The study today, most of it has come from a book called Disciplines of a Godly Young Man. There are two chapters in this book that were just really well written. They're not in the other two books, and I don't know why, because the topic we're going to be dealing with today is not something that only applies to young men, but it is something that I believe people of all ages can glean from. So we'll be discussing discipline of the mind, our thoughts, and refusing certain areas and filling in other areas. It is stated that the mind is a terrible thing to waste. And I would argue that on a spiritual level, there is much wasting that occurs in our minds, in the minds of believers. There is wasting of a mind is wasting something that in God's creation is one of the most amazing aspects of God's creation. The human brain is one of the most complex and incredible aspects of in the entire universe, I would argue. In all of our inventive genius and all of the various devices we have made, from personal computers to iPads to cell phones, none of them has the greatness and complexity of the human brain. We have this quote from Kent and Carrie Hughes. They say this, they say, "The complex capacity of the human brain is a subject of ever-widening scientific wonder. It is 10 billion cells, neurons. They are only a shadow of its complexity, because each cell sends out tens of thousands of tentacles that connect again to tens of thousands of neighboring cells, each of which is constantly exchanging data impulses." The human brain is just of incredible complexity, and a complexity that we do not even fully understand at this point. Chris Koch, a chief scientific officer at the Allen Institute for Brain Science, calls the brain the most complex object in the known universe. And this is a bold statement, given the vastness and the greatness of the universe. And it is his statement that the human brain is the most complex object in all of the universe. Kent and Carrie Hughes say this. They say, "The staggering fact that the total number of possible pathways through the brain exceeds 10 to the 80th power, which is more than all protons and neutrons in the universe. From the perspective of communication, the human brain is the most complex system in the cosmos." So just to give you perspective, that's a 10 with 80 zeros behind it. And I would argue it's of even more impressiveness in that the brain operates on pizza, that we feed our bodies donuts and steak and vegetables. And the brain runs on incredible energy efficiency, something I would argue that we have not invented any type of computer, any type of supercomputer that runs on anywhere near that kind of efficiency. And I want to argue this, the greatest potential of the brain is seen in the fact that we can know God, that we can know the things of God, and that we can interact with God, and we can even have, I would use the words of Paul, the mind of Christ. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 2:14-16. And Paul writes this, "The natural person does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him. He is not able to understand them because they are spiritually discerned. The spiritual person judges all things, but is himself to be judged by no one. For who has understood the mind of the Lord as to instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ." This greatest aspect of the human mind is that you can know God and you can comprehend aspects of God. This, by the way, makes you distinct from all other creatures that the Lord has made on this earth. Paul writes this in Philippians 2:4-8. "Let each of you look not only to his own interest, but also to the interest of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by being obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. Again, calling us to have the mind of Christ. Humans can have the mind of Christ through the work of the Holy Spirit, the Lord working within you, renewing your mind. Our minds are something that has been greatly impacted by the fall, something that has taken this great aspect of creation, which is the human mind, and has led it not to do what it was given to do, which is to know God and to glorify God, but rather has led it to do all kinds of acts of wickedness, all kinds of focus and emphasis and dwelling upon that which is carnal and unrighteous. But through the work of the Holy Spirit, through the renewing of the mind, that can be changed. Romans 12, 1 and 2, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. The irony is that many are not being conformed in this way, but rather they're being conformed and transformed to the ways of the world. They're not being transformed and renewed within their mind. The greatness of the human mind and all of its complexities and abilities for analytics has its greatest potential in that it can know God, that the human can know God with their mind, that this mind is something that, although affected by the fall, can be transformed again by God. But the problem is we have great influences that are fighting the opposite direction, that are pulling us a contrary direction. Harry Blamey, in his book, The Christian Mind, writes this. He says, the Christian mind has succumbed to a secular drift with a degree of weakness and nervelessness unmatched in human history. This is a great mind that the Lord has given you, which exists, dear friend, for the glory of God. And we as Christians, we're not always careful with this mind that we're given. We're not always cautious in what we're filling our minds with. We're not always cautious in the ways in which we're saying, no, I don't need to focus upon that. I don't need to be meditating upon that. The writer in Proverbs writes this in Proverbs 4:23, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Keeping this in mind, that which you're taking in is going to influence that which comes out of you. Many times that which is coming out of you, you will blame it on, well, I was just tired, or I was just, you know, this stressed me. But the truth is, many times that which is coming out of us is there because that's what is within us. We've reviewed some of these stats before, but I want to walk through them one more time just to give us some perspective. And we're going to go at this from a different perspective than we did before, because we went through these stats previously when we talked through education and the Christian view on education and the influences of the humanistic secular mindset in education and how it is influencing Christians and people that say they're Christians to think in that same manner. But I want us to think in these in this other manner, in what we're filling our minds with, even apart from a formal education setting. This is from a study that George Barna did many years back. And he says this. He says, one-third of all adults, 34%, believe that moral truth is absolute, unaffected by circumstances. Slightly less than half of born-again adults, 46%, believe in the absolute moral truth. 46% of those claiming to be Christians believe that there's such a thing as absolute moral truth, according to the survey. Next, it says, half of all adults firmly believe that the Bible is accurate in all the principles it teaches. The proportion includes four-fifths of born-again Christians, 79%, who concur. Continuing, just one-quarter of adults, 27%, are convinced that Satan is a real force. Even a minority of born-again Christians, 40%, adopt that perspective. Continuing, similarly, only one-quarter of adults, 28%, believe that it is impossible for someone to earn their way into heaven through good behavior. Not quite half of all born-again Christians, 47%, strongly reject the notion of earning salvation through their deeds. We have some problems with how some of these are being labeled, but even still, these are people that are claiming to be born again and then being inconsistent on just the very basic principles even of the gospel. Continuing on, a minority of American adults, 40%, are persuaded that Jesus Christ lived a sinless life while he was on earth. Slightly less than two-thirds of the born-again segment, 62%, strongly believe that he was sinless. And lastly, 7 out of 10 adults, 70%, say that God is all-powerful, all-knowing, creator of the universe who rules today. That includes 93% of born-again adults who hold that same conviction. Doing a little better in that stat. Barna concluded this. He concluded by noting that the lack of movement and the worldview status of adults reflects the fact that children are not provided with the basic ability to think in ways that correspond to foundational biblical teachings. He noted that Christian families, schools, churches would be wise to invest more effort and tangible resources into helping young people understand and adopt the core ideas of Christianity and to reinforce those concepts through their lives. And Barna looks at this from this formal education standpoint, and that's something that we've hammered on before and we've emphasized before, but I want us not just to look at it from a formal education standpoint, but I want us to think of this in this more informal ways in which we are educating ourselves, in that which we are feeding ourselves with, in that which we are meditating on. And when we're on the internet, that's what we're bringing into our households and individually as we're watching on televisions. I know many of us will proudly say, I don't have a television, but let's be honest. You have Amazon Prime and you have Netflix. And so you don't get to remove yourself from this and sit on a high horse in that way. We still have these things, and we need to recognize how they influence us, how they affect us. And we need to be able to recognize and see these contrary worldviews that are being communicated to us and see the ways in which they are molding the ways that we think, the ways that they are in some ways desensitizing stuff. Change is something that would have appalled us previously is something that we now maybe are finding as entertaining or looking at even as I dare say, art. And I want us to think on this, and the question is why? Why are you finding something which is so offensive to God to be entertaining? I don't have a perfect answer for this, and we're not going to do is lay down a list of here's all the shows you can watch, and here's the movies you can watch, and these are the ratings that you have to stay with, and that's not the purpose of this. But it is for us to do some self-reflection and to think upon these areas. And just to recognize this, Jesus says this in Luke 6:45, the good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good. The evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And that is looking back at that's what's coming out of you. Like the old saying goes, there's nothing that comes out of a drunk man that wasn't there even when he was sober. But I want us to think of this as ourselves. When we're choosing these areas in which we're going to focus and draw our attention to, there is a way that we are speaking in a certain way there. We are making an intellectual decision that's influencing how we act. We are choosing to do this. And our decisions in doing this are coming from the desires within us. There's a desire in our hearts towards these things. And so there are many cautions within Scripture, cautions for us to turn away from that which is evil, not set our minds on things that are evil, and to set our minds on things that are good. Philippians 4:8, Paul says this, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think on these things. How often are we guilty of violating this? How common in our lives are we not just not thinking on this, not setting our minds on these things, but rather doing the very opposite? Instead of taking down that which is good, we're drinking down that which is absolutely trash, just taking in whatever the world offers. And so taking a little bit of this time to deal with this area of entertainment. I mean, there is a place for relaxation. It's reasonable to watch, to enjoy yourself. There is a God honoring time of relaxation. We are not God, and I believe one of the evidences that we're not God is that we have to sleep. I don't know if that's God's reason why we have to sleep, but it's a continual reminder to us. God doesn't sleep. We have to sleep. We have to rest. Well, intellectually, with our minds, we can't be going, going, going. There must be a time of rest and relaxation, and that time may be involving something that in and of itself isn't something that is, in and of itself might not be worthwhile, but the fact that you're relaxing and doing this makes it worthwhile. So you can do something that is not like maybe, you know, I don't know, picking up a theology book and reading it, that might not be relaxing to you. You may do something like you may turn on Netflix and watch something. And what I'm arguing here is that's not necessarily wrong. It can be very appropriate. It can be very healthy. And it's these times of rest and refreshment that we have so that we can better utilize ourselves at other times, because we do need these times. And I would argue we're made to need this. We're made to need times of rest and relaxation. But that said, we still need to be taking these commands into account, thinking upon what is true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, not the opposite. It's not a time just to let all these things go and just to, as though this isn't something that is does not affect us spiritually, which it does. Let's talk about television. Television is something, and I know most of you are going to say, this isn't my household, but this is the average, according to the stat, is that the average television in a household is on for 7 hours and 17 minutes a day. And I know you're saying, no, it's not on that much. That's fine, but don't dismiss it just at that. Stay with me in what I'm saying. My point here is that this is a lot of influence. This is a lot of education that is happening through these screens, various screens that we have. It could be through television. It could be through an iPad. It could be through your phone. It could be through various means. And even saying television here might be dated for some people in the younger generation, because maybe you're not on television as much, but you're on things that are going to fit into these categories that I have here. In many ways, it's going to be consistent here. And many things that come into the minds of people, if you're not cautious, if you're not on guard, if you're not intentional, and that's the word I want to use, intentional in how we're doing this, intentional in how we're using our times of relaxation. And that's one thing that can be positive about some of these modern forms of media like Amazon Prime or let's say Netflix or something like that, is that you can say, we're going to watch this, and you watch that, and then you can turn it off, and then you can go on with your life. Whereas the other way is, well, the TV just keeps running, and then you just kind of get sucked into the next program. But my goal here is to encourage you to be intentional in these things and to be mindful even of what you're doing during this time period. But some of the effects of this are, I mean, something like television, something like some of these other forms of media, they promote a passivity. You're not actively involved in something. You're sitting back. You're taking this in. It's not forcing your brain. It's not like a book. Like if I read a book, I've got to use my brain. I've got to imagine. If it's a fictional book, I've got to create these ideas in my head. It's the opposite in television. Everything is there for you. The sounds are there. The pictures are there. And there's kind of a passivity that can influence us there. And that's the passivity that we do not want. Next is that there is an aspect in which it shortens attention span. Emphasis on these various forms of mediums can shorten your attention span. I say this as someone who has taught young children to read for a long time. I can look at the child very quickly and know the child that is spending 8 hours on Saturday playing Call of Duty or playing Minecraft because they can't keep their eyes on a book. They will look down for a minute and then their eyes are up, and it's because the words aren't moving. You're having to do this other work, and we just need to know this, that it influences us, it affects us in these ways, and it affects us, and this is contrary to what we need in working through critical thought, in working through ideas of theology, even, I would argue, thinking through ideas in politics. You can turn on the television, and even some conservative political talk show, and the ability for people to make points, lay them out, consistently argue them in a way that is appropriate is almost, maybe I don't want to be hyperbolic, but it's oftentimes missing. And one of the problems is that there's just not enough time. There's like 3.5 minutes. And so you've got two sides here that have got to make their point in this period of time before this commercial break. And you end up with a lot of hyperbole, conjecture, ad hominem, and this side's bad, this side's good, and it's just kind of a banter that keeps going. And we end up in this modern thought many times saying things like, well, I feel this way. We're driven, we're affected by these mediums, and we are influenced by images to this feeling rather than this idea of thinking, and it affects what we say. We'll say, I feel, when we really should have said, I think. And that's not what we're doing. We're feeling, we're being influenced by whatever we have there that's influencing us at the time. So television kind of has this idea to do this thinking for us. Malcolm Muggeridge says this. He says, television was not intended to make human beings vacuous, but it is an emanation of their vacuity. It just kind of, it can create that within us if we're not careful. These different forms of media that we have, these different forms of technology can create distance in people. Whenever the television was invented, the communication philosopher Marshall McLuhan looked at the television, and he looked at it in hopes that it would be this great uniter, that in some way it was going to bring humanity together. It was going to bring the world together. And it kind of, what it does is it ends up separating us. It ends up separating us into different rooms. It ends up separating us into different ideas. And I would argue that a step forward to that is going to be this cell phone. You go into a place, some type of a waiting room, a place where people would have interacted with each other, where people would have talked to each other, where there would have been some kind of small talk. Maybe to a degree the small talk would have been a little bit empty. It would have been maybe on sports or the weather or whatever was going on with the kids at the time. That's absent in many ways now. Because what do you see? And this is, I would argue, across the board. This isn't just, oh, this is just the world. No, this is Christians. This is humans in the United States. What are we doing? We got our phones out, and we're doing that. We may like give a nod at someone, or we may grin at someone, but the phones are out, and we're typing on them. And these devices, which were thought to, this is going to unite people more. This is going to give more connectivity. To a degree it does, and in a certain way it does, and then in other ways it creates this just distance. And this is, I'm saying this that we would just recognize this and know this and be intentional of these practical ways that this world that we live in, these devices that we have are influencing us, affecting us individually, affecting our families, affecting those that we are interacting with in society. Next, we have this idea of it subverts the soul. The content on television and many areas of the internet is destructive to you spiritually. The same refuse that at one point would have been so offensive would have turned you off. You would have said, if someone would have walked up to you and said certain things to you, you would have had nothing to do with them, or you would have rebuked them. That same message is then given a catchy beat, is given nice images, is, you know, there's a clown on the screen at the time making a joke out of it, and then it just becomes accepted, becomes allowed, not something that is a great outrage. One example of this is a rapper named Eminem. He had written songs throughout his career about his ex-wife, and he said started off kind of jokingly saying negative things, joking about killing her, and then ended up having a song where in graphic detail he grabbed her, killed her, threw her in a lake, and it's to this catchy, jokey song, and not the outcry that you would have imagined, not the this is unbelievable, how could this be happening? And there is a desensitization that happens when you're continually allowing yourself to be influenced by these areas, and you don't notice it. It's like they say, the fish doesn't know that he's wet. If you're continually allowing these areas to influence you and you're not being mindful of what you're taking in, they will desensitize you. The shock will begin to grow away. You will have like a spiritual callus. Like you know, you do work with your hands and you'll get a callus on your hand. Well, you'll get that spiritually. And just know this, I'm not saying any of this so that you can go and get some ammunition and go after someone else. I'm saying everything that I'm saying here so that we can be looking at ourselves. We can be thinking through where we're putting our emphasis, how it is that we're spending our time, what it is that we're meditating on. Kent Hughes and Carrie Hughes make this statement in this book, Disciplines of a Godly Young Man. They say, it is impossible for any Christian who spends the bulk of this time, month after month, day after day, day in and day out, viewing the fare of the media conglomerates to have a Christian mind. It's going to affect you. Maybe they're being a little hyperbolic there. Maybe not. Maybe they're not being hyperbolic. Maybe they're being candid and they're just speaking the truth to you. So there needs to be, I say all this to say, there needs to be a refusal. There needs to be a degree to which we say, okay, there are aspects, there are things that I'm not going to participate in. There are things that we're going to have to draw some lines here. And I think we need to, there's an argument here. We need to have this in two ways, because I made an argument here for the practical ways this can influence you, and also I'm making an argument for the spiritual ways. So we need to be mindful of our technology, our devices, our television, these various forms that we're taking in. So we need to be careful of how much we are taking in, and we need to be careful of what we are taking in. There's got to be a refusal. There's got to be some walls that we intentionally put up, and that's part of being intentional in how we're using our time. You're going to have to dictate and say, I'm not going to watch this. I'm going to have to be intentional on this. If my family is going to watch something, we're going to watch this. This is what we're going to watch. We're intentionally going to turn. And nowadays, you can do that. You can pick this item, and you can watch that item. And if you're watching regular television where the next thing comes on, you're going to be intentional of that. And you need to be intentional, my dear friends, even on what is crossing the screen during the commercials, because it hasn't been so much in times past. It used to be in, you know, areas of Europe, you'd have to be more careful with the commercials. I would argue some of the commercials are beginning to cross lines in which you just need to be mindful. You just need to know. It doesn't need to be like, oh, you know, I'm not really going to think on this. You need to intentionally know what you're doing and be thoughtful of these things. 1 Timothy 4, 7 through 8. Paul writes this, have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths. Rather, train yourselves for godliness. For while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. Paul is calling us here to refuse certain things that are not just a distraction to godliness, but can even be a detraction from godliness, because what they're doing is they're instructing you in the very opposite ways of godliness. If your entertainment is something that is consistently ungodly, if this is where you're finding joy and pleasure and things that are purely worldly, you need to ask yourself, why is this? Why is this? And this is something, again, I want to make sure we're emphasizing, this is something I'm calling you to do. I'm not calling you to take the fences that you've put in your life and project them onto other people. Kent and Carrie Hughes say this. They say, you must take control of the time you spend sitting in a default mode, sitting in front of a screen. I mean, ouch. If that's not something that I think must affect many of us, I would say this is something that we have to think through in my family. So don't think that I'm saying this like, the Wright family has this all taken care of. Pastor Wright has this perfectly worked out. No, this is something that we are working out. We're continually working out. We're continually having to think through. And even having to think through, I would argue, as the children go through various ages. This is not something that just works in a, you know, we can just pass this out, and in the back of the room you'll have your worship guide, and then you'll have your media list that you can take with you and know exactly what it is that you're allowed to watch for the week in your family. It's not that way. It's something that you're going to have to think through. But this taking control and removing that which causes a believer to sin is something that I would argue Jesus taught. Jesus says this in Matthew 5, 29 through 30. He says, if your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away, for it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away, for it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go to hell. There needs to be a controlling in these certain areas, and there is going to perhaps be a cutting off. And some of us may have lost control in certain areas, and you need to be cut off. You need to be cut off perhaps from the internet. You need to be cut off from television. You need to be cut off from these areas because it is something that is dragging you into sin, and is something that I would argue that Jesus is calling you to do, is to cut these things off if you do not have the control in these areas. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, the writer says this, therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin that clings closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for joy was set before us, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand and throne of God. And think on these ways that we're going to lay aside every weight. How many of us are at times putting weights on? How many of us are taking a backpack and filling it up with sinful weights that are actually dragging us down spiritually? And we're doing this in our passivity. We're doing this in our lack of intentionality in these areas where we aren't having good supervision. We're not having good accountability in these areas. And we're allowing ourselves to fall into these areas that are causing us great harm. So the writer of Hebrews is saying, you know, lay aside every weight. Okay, not just lay it aside, quit filling up the backpack. Quit adding the weight on to yourself even. Psalm 101, 1 through 3, the writer says this. He says, I will sing of the steadfast love and justice to you, O Lord. I will make music. I will ponder the way that is blameless. Oh, when will you come to me? I will walk with the integrity of the heart within my house. I will not set before my eyes anything that is worthless. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not cling to me. Is this our desire? Do we have this desire? Do we have this desire not to set before our eyes that which is worthless? Do we have this desire to be intentional about what we are doing? So this is not just about don't do this. If you walk away from this, that Pastor Wright's just telling us not to watch TV. He's telling us not to be. I'm not telling you that. And I'm not just telling you this is about just don't watch these things. The Christian life is not just a series of thou shalt nots or don't do this. There is a putting off and there is a putting on. There is a way in which this needs to be removed, but you can't just have a vacuum. You can't just, well, I'm just not going to do this, or I'm just not going to think about this. I'm not going to think about this bad thought. I'm not going to think about this bad thought. Well, what are you thinking about? It's not going to work that way. Something has to be filled. Matthew 12, 43 through 45, and this is just kind of an idea of just merely cleaning is not enough. Don't take this into some spiritual warfare idea. But just the idea of just merely cleaning out is not sufficient. Something else needs to fill that space. Matthew 12, 43 through 45. When an unclean spirit has gone out of a person, it passes through waterless places seeking rest, but finds none. Then it says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when it comes, it finds a house empty, swept, put in order. Then it goes and brings with it seven other spirits more evil than itself. And they shall enter and dwell there. And the last state of the person is worse than the first. So also will it be for this evil generation. And I'm saying this just to point out that it's not sufficient just to clean your house. It's not sufficient to say, I'm just not going to do this. There are people I have dealt with previously that have had an addiction in one area. And okay, they deal with that addiction, but they have not replaced it with Christ. And they just end up filling it in with some other addiction. And people look at them and say, oh, wow, look at what achievements they've made. But now you see the person over here, and they went from struggling in this area of drug addiction, and now they're in this area of a sexual addiction. And now it's like this
You just switched. You just changed things. You didn't, there wasn't something else that was filled in there. So there needs to be this idea that Paul talks about, this putting off. There needs to be this putting on. This is a picture that we have within the Christian life. Colossians 3, 5 through 10. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. If these two once you walked when you were living in them, but now you must put them away. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge after the image of its creator. There is this idea that I'm putting this off and I'm putting this on. This is going away and this is going to be here. So what are the things that we need to be filling our minds with if we're not going to be in these areas and we're not going to be filling our minds with that which is worldly? We need to be filling our minds with that which is worthwhile, that which is good. And the first place we're going to point you to here is we're going to think about Scripture and ways in which we can fill our minds with Scripture. The first way is going to be the most obvious, reading the Word. Reading the Bible, that is something that you should regularly be involved in. You have an opportunity that so many within history have not had. Many even within the world do not have. You have the ability to read the Bible in your language. You have the ability to read the Bible in many different translations in your language. And it's something that I would encourage you to regularly be involved in, individually and with your family. You read 2.5 to 3 chapters a day, and you read through the whole Bible in a year. Think about all the time that we spend in these other forms of entertainment, these other areas, how little time of your life it would really take. Why should we all not be reading the Bible in a year? What sense does it make for us not to be able to read 2.5 to 3 chapters in a day? I believe that that's something that is reasonable for everyone and something that you should set as just a bare minimum goal is I'm going to read 3 chapters of the Bible a day. Secondly, the way in which you are filled is you hear the Word. The regular worship on the Lord's Day is one of those aspects of this feeling, this filling. The Lord's Word is being proclaimed. Sometimes this is overlooked, but I want to argue to you this is one of the primary ways in which the Lord uses for your discipleship and your sanctification. So the primary ways is that which happens on the Lord's Day, the people gathering together. This is one of those areas, and it is something that will influence you throughout the week. How you spend your day on Sunday is something that will influence you throughout the week. Next, the area of meditation. In this idea of meditation, it's not like this Eastern style where I'm just emptying my mind. We're not just emptying our mind, but what we're doing is we are emptying certain things. We're putting off certain things, but we're also reflecting on certain truth. There's a lot of ways that this can happen. This can happen in you just sitting and reflecting and thinking on something. This can be something that happens over time. There's many times where I've been pondering and thinking on something in Scripture or in theology, and I've been driving, and I just turn the radio off, and I don't have a podcast on, I don't have the music on, and I'm just thinking, I'm just pondering, I'm meditating on these things. My eyes aren't closed, I'm watching the road. You can't do that if the traffic is too crazy, but it's just a time of I'm just going to think, I'm going to ponder, I'm going to reflect, and there's ways in which you're going to make connections. The Lord speaks to you those times, not audibly, but through just making these connections in theology and saying, oh, wow, that affected this area of life. I didn't realize that, or this is how that ends up working out, and it requires that you turn off the talk radio, you turn off the sports radio, you got to have a certain degree of distraction that can't be there. Now, if you're in a household and you're managing a household, it may just have to be a time where there's less distraction. Because let's face it, many times you don't always have the perfect quiet that you would want. And lastly, let's think through aspects of Christian literature. And I don't just mean reading. Certainly, reading books. But also, let's think about even areas of audio and video. And we've got a lot of opportunities here. We have desired for you to redeem certain times in your life, to intentionally, you know, fill things within the lives of your family and you individually as you're driving places, as you're going on trips, as you're going to and from work, as you're driving to and from co-op, and to think through these different things. Not that that's all that you have to do, but that's something that you can do, and that's why we have this lending library in the back. There's many videos, there's much audio back there that can just be utilized. You can put something in, and even if it's just for, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and you can listen to it, and it gives you this opportunity to fill your mind with these important things that are useful, that are beneficial for your family to be taking these things in. And that's something that can help in conversations. If you're desiring to have better conversations with your family and with your wife in these areas, introduce some of these things. All right. So sometimes it's not like I'm just gonna figure out how we're gonna do all this right. Well, let's start doing something. And whatever it is that you listen to, that gives you an opportunity to talk through. Whatever it is that you watch, that gives you an opportunity to talk and to discuss that. And lastly, I want to just give a plug for another thing that we have in modern times, which, you know, I've said certain things about technology that, you know, there can be negative aspects, and I just wanted to emphasize that there are, but there are incredible positive aspects that exist with technology. And on this iPhone that I have, I'm able to pull up just some of the greatest theological content just at the push of a button. And I just wanted to give you a plug for a few podcasts that I find to be very, very useful ways in which you can be working in this area of filling. And it's consistency is what I would argue to you. Find ways to be consistent. Find things that we can regularly do. Let's walk through a couple of these. First one is The Briefing that's done by Al Mohler. And what he does is he looks at topics of the day. He looks at political topics, things that come up in the news, and he just analyzes them from a Christian worldview. And if you're someone that struggles analyzing things from a Christian worldview, like I do many times, I don't immediately see a movie and then I'm able to break the whole thing up, or read a news article and immediately see the worldview the person is coming from. Al Mohler does this, and it's a great way for you to learn how to do that and also to keep up with some of the modern events. And he does it in about 20 minutes. I don't know how he does this. I don't know if he doesn't sleep, because some of these are coming out at 4 a.m. Perhaps he sleeps during July, because July is the month he always takes off from doing The Briefing. But the other 11 months, they come out, 5 days a week, and they're always there. When I'm driving to work in the morning, I can always click on The Briefing and get a review of what happened in the news, get a review of it from a Christian worldview, and it's been very beneficial to me in my thinking, in my ability to think through things. A couple more, White Horse Inn, just another group. It's Michael Horton, and he's got, it's mixed. He's got like a Lutheran and a Baptist and a Presbyterian, and they just kind of sit and they talk over various topics. It could be anything philosophical, political, to theological. Renewing Your Mind, they put out one of these every single day. Every single day they put out another one, and they're always good. And they're always, you know, there's very few times I would ever be like, oh, I'm not sure about that. R.C. Sproul has the ability to communicate in, you know, 15, 20 minutes what it takes me an hour and a half to say. He is so concise. He's so clear. Something that maybe some of the younger people might like, Wretched Radio. If you, some of the older people, if you see this, you might think this is kind of ADD. Or if you watch the video, they're always zooming in and out with the camera and but many people like this, and it comes from a Christian worldview, and it's just a podcast, kind of a Christian talk radio show, and very evangelically driven. Nine Marks is another good one that I've enjoyed. Mark Dever oftentimes will interview people, and I've benefited much from those. Dividing Line, it's interesting. I will say that this is my favorite podcast, but I will say it's not everyone's favorite podcast. And you will get everything from trivia on Star Trek to, P-42, whatever manuscript that James R. White's working through at the time. And very much, he's done a really good job lately. If you have any desire or to in any way be evangelizing Muslims, he's been doing a lot of work in that area. It's coming out in a lot of his podcasts. Another one, I've never listened to this one, but this is James R. White's daughter. I've heard that it's decent. It's called Sheologians. So that's another one you could check out. Polemics Report, I believe that's J.D. Hall, and he is just, once again, it's a decent one. And one that children might like is Jonathan Park. It's kind of along the lines of Adventures in Odyssey, but it's more, just has a theme of kind of a creationism, and it's the audio drama is done decent. I think you have to pay a fee to do that one. It's like $9 a month. But my children have enjoyed it. And the last one that I'll mention is called the Reform Forum. There's a plethora on that group, just many. They're all going to be from a Presbyterian perspective, but most of them are very good, and they can be very beneficial. So I'd encourage you to look at these and even look at others and just be intentional. I'm going to be getting in the car regularly, driving in my life this direction, you back and forth. Let me be intentional about that time. It doesn't mean that that's all you can do. I'm not telling you to wear yourself out. Once again, I started off with an argument that there needs to be times of rest and relaxation, and maybe there does. Maybe you need to listen to sports radio at times, and that's fine. But I'm encouraging you to find other ways to do this filling, because this technology that I argued can be hindering to your spiritual growth, I showed you here at the end that it can be beneficial. There's ways in which, with just the click of a button on an iPhone or, you know, some other type of phone, that you could just click on and immediately have access to so many of these. And if you didn't have the phone, if you had an internet connection and you were just intentional even there, that you could make preparations so that it would be on an MP3 player. And so just that's the encouragement here, is just a reminder that we need to be mindful of what it is that we're putting into our minds, what we're meditating on, what we're reflecting on, what we're focusing on, and be cautious, be willing to refuse certain things and recognize that they're harmful to us, and likewise, fill ourselves with that which is good, and be mindful of that as well.